So we've come to the end. It's already the end. Just like life itself, the end is always too soon. In the beginning, you had so many plans and so many things you thought you were going to do, and then in the end, it all worked out differently. And so much yet that somehow or other was never done. So it's like that with this seminar. There are many things that I didn't cover, and I'm not going to try and cram them all in the last session. But obviously, some big topics were not really dealt with very much, like Mayavad, right? We have not systematically smashed Mayavad, which obviously is a major topic in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Prabhupada points out it's one of the most important topics. Another topic that we did not deal with very much, only very little, is the topic of Gopi Bhav, which I feel is a topic which does need some explanations. And also Chaitanya Charitamrita is really displaying some of the most exalted intimate dealings of the Lord and His devotees. I'll begin a little more at the beginning. First of all, Chaitanya Charitamrita is a huge work. It has 12,555 verses, 2,815 purports, and 62 chapters. And if we consider all that, then there's a lot of material. The first 14 verses are important because these first 14 verses are like making major statements about the rest of the book. The first 7 chapters are basically explanations of these first 14 chapters. In fact, if you do the exercise, the first 14 verses are found back in this first 7 chapters. And it is actually stated like that by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. Like, in each of these chapters he'll say, and now we'll be explaining the... And then he gives which verse he's explaining. The 5th verse or the 6th or that. Or like that. So one can just trace him back right through the first 7 chapters. These first 14 verses. So these are very important. And they establish various points. They establish that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is none other than Radha and Krishna. They're establishing that the real purport of the Upanishads is pure devotional service. And like that, many topics are established in these first 14 chapters, verses. Then, immediately after these 14 verses, we get the mantras glorifying the principal deities of Vrindavan. First of all, glorifying Madan Mohan, then glorifying Sisi Radha Govinda, and finally Sisi Radha Gopinath. So then that is explained further, and it is said that Madan Mohan is the deity that is the attractor of Cupid, he who bewilders everyone's mind. So Madan Mohan is specifically there to establish the sambandha, the connection. He's Krishna in his all-attractive feature. Govinda is known as the instructor. Govinda is the one who speaks Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. He's Krishna in his instructing form. So instructions are pertaining to the process of devotional service. Therefore, that deals particularly with Abhideya, right, which is the process of devotional service. Then Gopinath deals with Prayojana, which is the goal of spiritual life, Prema Pumarta Mahan, to develop love of God. And that is displayed particularly in the Lord's dealing with the gopis. So Gopinath is dealing with the topmost aspect of devotional service, Prayojana. So yesterday we dealt with that. Maybe I should again write a little on the board. Yesterday we spoke a little bit about devotees who have their different levels of realization, and we mentioned how they were relating to different aspects of ISKCON. We can also see that the Kanista Adhikari, or the neophyte devotee, that his main focus is Sambandha. His main focus is to become fixed in the process of devotional service. He has to situate himself in sadhu sangha, and he has to situate himself in bhajana kriya, in the process of devotional service. So that is his main focus, Sambandha. Whereas the Madhyamadhikari, he is fixed, he believes in the scriptures, and he's really trying to follow them. So his main focus is Abhideya, the process of devotional service. Therefore, his main focus is Anartha Nivritti, and to become fixed, Nista, and to develop some Ruchi, and even to become deeply attached to Krishna, to develop Ashakti. So that area, from Anartha Nivritti to Ashakti, is specifically the focus of the Madhyamadhikari, whose main focus is Abhideya. Then when one becomes deeply emotionally involved in bhava or in prema, then one is really focusing on the on Gopinath, on the pastimes of the Lords and the gopis in Gopinath. So we can understand that these three, therefore, according to, or these Kanista, Madhyam, and Uttama Adhikari, who each have their own focus, will also have a different approach towards the Chaitanya Charitamrita, or towards the pastimes of the Lord. Just like Prabhupada pointed out that the five most important subject matters in the Chaitanya Charitamrita for the Madhyam Adhikari were the instructions, the teachings to Rupa, Sanatan, discussions with Ramananda Roy, defeating Mayavad to both Sarvabhauma, Bhattacharya, and Prakashananda Saraswati Thakur. So he mentioned these five. And, whereas there are so many other topics that we could describe. So we can also relate to it like that. The other day, I gave a Bhagavatam class in the morning, and on the 10th canto and the gopis meeting Krishna and being rejected by Krishna. And then also we took it from that same point of view, that these pastimes are to be approached in a different way by different devotees. We saw in one of the earlier sessions of this seminar, I mentioned that Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami gave an instruction that one must hear about the intimate pastimes of Radha and Krishna. And then I pointed out that Prabhupada was just giving the opposite instruction in the purport. It was very interesting that there was a total difference, 180 degree turn, really. Krishna's Kaviraj gave a strong injunction. He used the Sanskrit word bhavet, which means you must. It is like your duty. And Prabhupada said, but only if you're a liberated soul. And therefore. So again, this is referring to different levels of Vaishnavas relating to different matters. according to their own realization. And that one should not overstep one's realization. In speaking to Kirtanananda in the earlier days, once Kirtanananda was complaining to Prabhupada, saying that, why are you always speaking about against Mayavad, right, here in the Western world, always preaching Mayavad? Why Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nirvisesa Sunyavadi Pasyate Desa Tarine? Why the Nirvisesa and Sunyavadi in the Pasyate Desh, right? As if, I mean, India is more the headquarters of impersonalism. Why the West? He said, why not just preach to the atheist? And Prabhupada simply said, you're saying that because you are a Mayavadi. And yes, we are in many ways very impersonal. Right? In many ways, the modern mechanistic worldview of the Western world is very impersonal, a big impersonal machine in which everything is just rotating by magnetic fields and various laws that are governing the physics of the whole matter. And that's about, and we ourselves as products of that very same impersonal energy. Then India is so much more personal, even that Mr. Agarwal, who is, or Gupta, or whatever his name may be, who is like inviting us to see the gods on his altar. At least he has the gods there. At least there is something personal. Yes, yes, you come and see my altar. And do they all fit? You know, everybody's there that you can imagine, and it's all one, right? So, actually, the West is more the place of impersonalism. And in Bhagavad Gita, in the 18th chapter, Prabhupada is also making a statement that we are worshipping the deities to root out these tendencies for impersonalism in our heart that have been there for so many lifetimes. He says, therefore, we practice worship of the deity to again gradually develop a personal mood as a servant. So like that, there are certainly traits of impersonalism within us, and we can contemplate on that, and therefore have to conquer this. We remember the two witches that haunt the consciousness are karma and jnana. I've also given Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's example of the two worms that live in the intestines and that just take all the nutrition of everything we eat. In other words, all the bhakti, all the service we do, the worms are taking away the taste. And therefore, we're doing all that devotional service and we are not getting so much out of it, just as intestinal worms would take nutrition. So all these things are there. And so the main thing is to become firmly fixed in devotional service. The Chaitanya Charitamrita, I would take it, is very much a book of sadachar, or the behavior of the sadhu, of saintly persons. Because, after all, if Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Bhakta Rupa and all the devotees are coming with him, they come to show the example. It is said that Krishna gave the transcendental instructions in Bhagavad Gita, but people did not accept it. Sarva dharmam paricheyamam ekam saranam vraja. Just give up everything and surrender unto me. So that's why Lord Chaitanya came, to personally teach by his own example, along with all the different devotees from the spiritual world, who also appeared together with him. And therefore together they were acting like perfect Vaishnavas. So more than anything, the Chaitanya Charitamrita is the example of how Vaishnavas act. And in that way, it's very close to us because they are devotees like us in many ways. Huh? Devotees and dhotis, and devotees with sikas, devotees with tilak, devotees that are offering each other obeisances, all these kind of... There is Vaishnav etiquette amongst them, seniors dealing with juniors. It's different than Srimad Bhagavatam, which is like taking us into another world, you know. Here are the super kshatriyas in Kurukshetra who are being pierced by arrows and they survive it. You know, they can still... it's like we, you know, if one little arrow would be enough to knock us out completely, right? Even if it would be not in a crucial part, we just might die out of shock. We are totally different kind of people, right? How inconceivable are they actually? And they are part of a Vedic culture, right? Srimad Bhagavatam is always talking about this Vedic culture. And whatever that is, we don't know, right? We have some sort of idea that we project upon the past, but nobody can really figure out what Vedic culture is, right? That's just, we have an impression of it. And some elements of it are alive in India, but what it actually was, exactly how it worked, is very, very difficult. And one cannot get it all from the books. I was once talking with Janani Vas in Mayapur about this, and we were talking about Varna Ashram, my favorite topic, and we were talking about Brahminical culture. And he was saying that, he says, you can't really, some things you just can't learn. He said, like, I've been here over 30 years now, but I still can't say that I know everything. He said, there's some things people just learn by birth, from the culture, from their very childhood. It's there, and there's certain things. And that is true, that some things are carried forward in the culture. We mentioned that Prabhupada was speaking about birth in India, that his favorite verse was, or the most quoted verse of Chaitanya Charitamrita, without a doubt, Bharata Bhumite Hoyalo Manushya Janma Jara Janma Sotakakara Para Upakara, which is stating that anyone who has taken his birth in the land of Bharat has the responsibility to preach Krishna consciousness and to relieve others' distress through this process. And Prabhupada then stated that, yes, in India, 50% is already there, just by birth, and the other 50% by culture. So that we can also consider. So anyway, Vedic culture is for us difficult to understand. Only certain aspects of it one can understand. I myself also spent many years in India and saw many parts of Vedic culture that are still alive. And that's very nice. But still, it's inconceivable. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes are very close to us, much closer, and yet they are perfect. We may say that still closer than Chaitanya Charitamrita in one sense is Prabhupada Lilamrita, right? Those pastimes we can really relate to. That's us, right? But there we don't see how all the devotees are experiencing their Krishna consciousness on the topmost level. But in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we see how the devotees are attaining full perfection. Full perfection. They come to Krishna Prema. It's very interesting. It is also interesting to see the distinction that is made between pure devotional service and Krishna Prema. and that one can engage in pure devotional service, but that still Krishna Prem depends on the mercy of the Lord. There's a few examples that come to my mind. One is the story of Mother Sachi, who was upset with Advaita Acharya because Vishwarup used to go there every day, her eldest son, for the Bhagavad classes, and after that he took sannyas. So then Mother Sachi was saying, it's because of these classes. Because he never used to go anywhere, and he was always at home doing his worship in the puja room, etc. And he certainly didn't get it from us. He must have gotten it from Advaita Acharya kind of mood. Well, so Advaita Acharya then was therefore held responsible, and actually it counted as an offense from Mother Sachi's part. So Lord Chaitanya at one point was giving blessings of love of God to various devotees, and in the middle of that assembly he said, but Mother Sachi, no way. Right? And everyone very shocked, not his own mother. Now, how that could be said, I cannot fully understand, because it seemed that she was overwhelmed with love of God from day one. Right? So don't ask me that question. I can't answer it. Mother Sachi seemed to have already love of God before that incident. She was looking after Nimai, totally with love of God. But still, it's mentioned in Chaitanya Bhagavat and also in the purport of the Adi Lila, chapter 17, that Mother Sachi wasn't getting it. So maybe after that offense, she wasn't getting it anymore. Something like that's possible. Krishna can take it back also. We cannot take anything for granted in Krishna consciousness. There is no doubt that whatever level of advancement we achieve, we have to earn it again and again from moment to moment. Surrender is not a one-time thing. Surrender is all the time. That is surrender. Right? Surrender means that one comes to a point where one goes on surrendering. Right? And not that, well, I surrender and then, okay, I've done it. No. That is our tendency, and that is why we speak of interrupted service, how our service becomes interrupted. Anyway, Mother Sachi was at that state given... Oh, I don't like bangs. Mother Sachi was given love of God. She was given love of God after she had touched the feet of Advaita Acharya, who did not want Mother Sachi to touch his feet, but when he heard that she'd made an offense, it is said he fainted, and Mother Sachi was told to take advantage of that while he was lying on the ground to quickly touch his feet. So in that way, she got love of God after all. Now another example is when Lord Chaitanya went to South India. There he met many personalities, and one person who heard about Lord Chaitanya coming to South India was the Brahmana Vasudev, who was a leper. He's that well-known person who had worms in his body that used to fall out, and he used to put them back because he felt that, if I leave them out, they will die, and I don't want to be the cause of their death, so better... they continue in their natural conditions. Not their fault that they are feeding on my body. Right? So he was putting the worms back like that. And so that Vasudev wanted to somehow or other meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he went to the spot where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was supposed to be. But when he arrived, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had already left. So he was so shocked that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had left. He just lamented and lamented and lamented. And it said that at that point, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just appeared again on that spot. And he just, there he was again, he was back. And then he gave the mercy to this Brahmana. He embraced him and cured his body. He then had a beautiful, healthy body after that. And so then Vasudev was, of course, very happy that the Lord was bestowing mercy upon him, etc. But then after the initial happiness was over, then he said, "But my dear Lord, now that I'm in this position, I'm wondering how will I be saved from falling prey to pride. Previously, that was very easy, because previously I was totally abominable and everyone would think that I was abominable, so I never had a chance to get carried away by pride, some low leper. Said, but now, you know, I might just be thinking that, well, an attractive brahmana like myself, right? So how do I save myself from being contaminated?" So then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed him to always chant the holy name of the Lord, Nirantar Nama Sankirtan. So this is a very important instruction, to endlessly chant the holy name of the Lord incessantly. And the other one was also to instruct whomever you meet about Krishna consciousness. So these were the two principles. And he said, and if you do that, then you will never be overcome by the three modes of material nature. I guarantee that. So here, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is giving a guarantee. See, these are not just guarantees to for Vasudev, but these are like particular guarantees for us. So the Lord has given all these little standards, right, for us in his pastimes to establish, okay, if you do these and these things, you're saved. This is the guarantee. Right? So therefore, Chaitanya Charitamrita is very important. It gives us these guarantees. It's not just nice, blissful stories about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you know, and it's far out how they were dancing in Sankirtan. Imagine he was crashing to the ground and he didn't break his bones, and wow, you know. Or it's not like, it's real philosophy, something to put your teeth in, you know. Like, I mean, you read, there's some heavy proof in there. Like, it's one very interesting part of the Chaitanya Charitamrita is that it really takes the Srimad Bhagavatam as proof, you know, in the second chapter. That's totally established, and it's like very strong, you know, like, and it's really establishing Krishna and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Lord. First of all, it makes Lord Brahma speak in the 10th canto after he's stolen the calves and cowherd boys, and then he has been caught by Krishna, and then he starts to offer prayers. And in these prayers, Lord Brahma establishes that Krishna is the origin from Brahman. And then he gives different arguments to prove it. And all that is quoted in the second chapter, really strong. And then there's a Sanskrit verse, Ete chamsa kala pumsa krishnas tu bhagavan swayam. Right? And Krishnadas Kaviraj gives such a sharp Sanskrit analysis of that, where he clearly points out that there's only one interpretation of that verse, that really, of all the incarnations, Krishna is the Supreme Lord. And no matter how you bend the Sanskrit, it always comes to that. So like that, strong proof from Bhagavatam. Yes, we gave some statistics also in the paper that you have there. And it is said that Bhagavatam was quoted 380 times. That I've got from Professor Dimmock, right? He wrote, he did a translation of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And in the back there are wonderful indexes, really a lot of studies, just details like that, technical details. They're very useful. So that we took from there. 380 times the Srimad Bhagavatam was quoted. So some people may like the CC for its authority, that it gives authority to our movement, that it proves that we are a bona fide movement and that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Lord. I did mention to you that in the second chapter, in verse 22, there is the list given of verses that establish Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the Supreme Lord. For those who feel that, well, you know, but is Srimad Bhagavatam really proof? Then you have to go outside the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Then you have to go to Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami, in his Tattva Sandarbha, is establishing that the Bhagavatam is proof. In the beginning of Tattva Sandarbha, he begins to explain that logic doesn't work, that it is based on faulty senses and on the four defects that are connected to pratyaksha, to sensual perception. He points out that logic is always faulty, that in any condition one is never sure. The Vedanta Sutra says that whatever position you take, there's always some insecurity in that position. And even if you change your position, the same fault is there. The Mahabharata says that it's not possible to conceive of the inconceivable. Achintyakalu, ye bhava, natamstakena yojayat. That it is not possible to logically try and understand the inconceivable. So therefore, Jiva Goswami says, therefore we should take to Veda. But then he says that is a problem. Because he says nowadays, first of all, we are not very qualified. Who can really study all the Vedas? And second is many portions of the Vedas have been lost. They're not even available anymore nowadays. So the full Vedas are not even available at these days. Therefore, he says we cannot actually study the Vedas. But then he proves he proves that the Itihasas and Puranas are also Vedic literature. The fifth Vedas is mentioned in the Mahabharata. It is mentioned in the Upanishads itself, that the Itihasas and Puranas are also coming forth of the breath of the Supreme Lord. Right? So not only the four Vedas. And finally, the Skanda Purana describes how Lord Brahma was speaking the four Vedas from his four mouths, and that after that he began to speak the Itihasas and the Puranas. So that includes then the 18 Puranas, the Ramayana, the Mahabharata, and all that as the fifth Veda. That term, fifth Veda, comes directly from Mahabharata. So, well, once we have proved that the Puranas are bona fide, then we can use Bhagavatam itself to establish that Srimad Bhagavatam is the Amalam Puranam. And then from there on, there we are. We have the proof. So that's for those who would not just accept Bhagavatam as proof, then there's Tattva Sandarbha. But so some may say, this Chaitanya Charitamrita is very important, because it lends the proof to our Sampradaya. And it is true that the second chapter of the Adi Lila is very important, because sometimes we are under attack. There are indeed in South India, for example, representatives from the Madhava Sampradaya who attack us and who say that it's not Krishna who is the Supreme Lord, it is Narayan. Right? So how to defeat that? Chaitanya Charitamrita defeats that, both in the second chapter and also in the preaching tour of Lord Chaitanya in South India, in the discussions between Venkata Bhatta and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It is very philosophically defeated in the second chapter, and more with an example and a narration there in the South Indian preaching tour. But like that, the CC, one thing it really does, it establishes First of all, Lord Krishna, without a doubt, as the Supreme Lord, as Govindam Adipurusham. It also states that it's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who found that fifth chapter from the Brahma Samhita, which was lost in a temple in South India, brought that back, and therefore Brahma Samhita is so important to us. Because it is the proof that has been directly given to us by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So in that way, we also see how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is helping us further to establish the conclusion that Krishna is the origin of all the other Purushas. Ete chamsa kala pumsam. Amsa kala pumsam is referring to the plenary portions, the parts of the plenary portions of the Purusha avatars, etc. So all these are considered secondary to the Supreme Lord. The Chaitanya Charitamrita totally goes into that, gives like a whole explanation of all the various expansions of the Lord. That what in the Brahma Samhita is described as dipachir eva hida santramabhyupecha dipayate vivrita henu samana dharma, or that concept of one candle lit from another endlessly, or how one form of the Lord expands from the other, is in great detail explained in the CC. I really had no time to get into that, but it is important, again, not only to prove to others that Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but it also has a more inner meaning for us. And in the more inner meaning, we find a description how Lord Krishna at one point is saying, what is it that I'm attracted to another form of myself? Now, it is Vasudev Krishna speaking, who was in Dwarka. When Krishna was in Dwarka, he is saying, what is it that I am attracted to another form of myself and develop the desire to become a maidservant? So here we see that Krishna even has the effect on its own expansions. On his own expansions, he has even this effect that he attracts his own expansions to become his servants in the rasa dance. Now that's a very amazing statement, but it points out that like Krishna is truly Bhaktaram. When we're talking about Bhaktaram, that he is the supreme enjoyer, right? That is Krishna. So that is very clear. And in that way, it is clearly established. Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. And rather, when it comes to dealing with the material energy or the material creation, all that is going on to his various expansions. He himself is not directly interacting with Maya. So all these things are given to us in the CC. Then we may continue. And we may see the behavior of different devotees of the Lord and how they just put Krishna first before anything, and how they always take anything as mercy. Shivananda Sen, at one point, he was an organizer. So he was every year organizing how the devotees were walking from Bengal to Jagannath Puri. And, you know, on the way, there were many toll gates, etc. Like when you go to Govardhan, it's on the way, there are so many barriers and you have to pay. And so in those days, that was already going on. So it's an old thing, road barriers. And they always ask too much. So therefore, many times it was necessary for negotiation. You couldn't just, you know, do it in 2 minutes. So on one occasion, Lord Nityananda was with the group, and they all had to wait too long for Sivananda to complete. And Lord Nityananda became upset that he had to wait so long. And when Sivananda Singh came back, he kicked him. He kicked him in the chest. Now, the cousin or nephew, it was the nephew of Sivananda, who was known as Sri Kanta, became very upset. He was saying, how can Nityananda kick my uncle like that? This is not appropriate. This is not the behavior of a devotee. Don't do such a thing. And I can't understand why Lord Nityananda behaves like this. This is not devotional. So he was judging it like that. But Sivananda himself was jumping around and was in ecstasy that he had been kicked by the lotus feet of the Lord. And we see how different devotees, they had that kind of transcendental mood that Lord Nityananda likes to kick. That comes out because Lord Nityananda, when he was in Kashmir, he met some Buddhists there, and he asked these Buddhists for some water, and they were in some sort of meditation and they didn't answer, and then Lord Nityananda kicked them in the face. He kicked them in the face. So, besides that, it's interesting that the Lord does that. It's especially attractive to me because Prabhupada used to say this also, kick him on the face, right? So many times, right? So, again, we can see that where Prabhupada got these things. And the more you find out about the books, right? And the more you read them, the more you begin to find out that all Prabhupada's statements have their origin in these books, right? And that he really so much was representing the books. That, like even the statement, Bhagavad Gita as it is only coming from the Mahaprakash. The Mahaprakash Lila that was being performed with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We also discussed how he sat on the Sringasan for 21 hours. And that during that time he was revealing many different things to many devotees. You may recall that we discussed about one Vaishnava who was chaste, was with his wife and daughter, and was followed by Muslims in the night. And he was afraid that the women might be raped or something like that, and he was saved by the Lord with a boat. You may remember how Lord Chaitanya placed his back over Haridas Thakur's back. So also he was revealing to Advaita Acharya. Advaita Acharya was trying to establish the Gitir Satya Path, the true path in the Gita, Gita Satya Path, right? And this is the true path in the Gita, or even in the, and it said that Lord Chaitanya helped him with a particular sloka at that point, in that Mahaprakash Lila. Prabhupada is in the purport of the Mahaprakash descriptions mentioning to that Gita Satya Path as this is the basis of the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Right? So we see that even the concept of Bhagavad Gita as it is actually coming directly from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Advaita Acharya, which is just makes Prabhupada still more authorized. Huh? Some people would say, oh yes, see, we're giving him so much glory, Prabhupada didn't get it from himself, right? Actually, just like these purports, they're not his original. Oh, we're giving him so much glory. Some voices have come up like that. But our answer to that is no. It makes him more glorious. More glorious that he's simply repeating what he has heard. Right? Prabhupada's chastity. He said the disciple is chaste, just like a chaste wife. Very chaste, right, to the spiritual master. And this principle is very, very important. And Prabhupada really displayed it like that. So that's why I kind of derived, I felt to stress in this seminar the importance of Prabhupada as the representative of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And not just kind of, you know, because he told everyone, chant Hare Krishna and be happy, kind of, and yeah, that was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission, the Yuga Dharma. No, I tried to establish it with these kind of illustrations in a more refined way. How Prabhupada was in the mood of Lord Chaitanya, and how much he had absorbed what Lord Chaitanya liked. Like yesterday, in our little friendly exchange with Tattvavi Prabhu, who called me a overzealous young sannyasi or something like that, right? Repressing my, what was it? Something like that. Repressing true feelings. But with time, I would probably mellow out. Well, in the midst of all that, it also came up. And so we see that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is very, very much on Prabhupada's mind. Prabhupada is constantly meditating. That is the point. He's in a deep, deep meditation. So when we were speaking about empowerment, it is this chastity, this meditation in chastity, right? Or in other words, trying to understand the spirit of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, trying to understand the spirit of the spiritual master. And in this mood, carrying on the work, there one becomes empowered. Like I've often mentioned about Prabhupada, that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta really said, well, why don't you just preach Krishna consciousness to the Western audience or something like that. He could have just, he filled it in such a fantastic way. And he could have just given a lecture, you know, and said, okay, I'm finished. Next instruction, you know, what's next, right? I've done that, Guru Maharaj. What's now? You know, what's next? I mean, but he took it to the max of its meaning, right? And even expanded upon it, even took it beyond the instruction, practically speaking. So all this I find as further illustration of the point of how much Prabhupada represented Chaitanya Charitamrita. We also see how Prabhupada simply based everything on the holy name and had great faith in there. And just that point of education, right? That yesterday with Tatravit we mentioned that point, that yes, no education, it says, no mundane education required at all. Not important. Only about Krishna consciousness. This morning I stumbled over a quote of Jiva Goswami, who said that atheistic literatures are so contaminating that even if we study them for the sake of refining our arguments to defeat them, that better we don't do that either, because the risk of getting contaminated is very great. So I think that upholds my stool test analogy quite nicely. So I stand by that. Yes, what to say. But not, as I mentioned before, with a spirit of fanaticism, but with a spirit of seriousness, right? I think that rather than just biting our teeth and saying, I'm going to be Krishna conscious, I'm rather in favor of the approach of deeply thinking about the consequences of either being Krishna conscious or not being Krishna conscious. And I think that for many of us, we could do more with thinking about life. We are not used to it. There is the kind of the herd syndrome, right, where which manifests very strongly in a movement like ours, right? When we come first, we come with some sort of mood of, I'm going to surrender to Krishna, right? Because we've read the books and we've become convinced, and then we come and we say, okay, this is it. Now I'm going to fully surrender to Krishna. But then after some time, we look at left, look around, and after a little while, we just join the other sheep and we start doing, well, they're not doing it, then I will also not do it. Right? And we begin to conform. We begin to conform. And we become one of the sheep in the herd. Right? And suddenly, our standard of Krishna consciousness becomes socially governed rather than something out of a deep conviction based on the philosophy. We begin to surrender to the point which is socially acceptable within the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So we may stay in that condition of complacency for many years, right? Living nice and complacent within ISKCON until one day, again, just we read a line and we wake up, right? One day I was reading in the CC and I was reading how Haridas Thakur was chanting 300,000 names and Maya came and tried to test him in that chapter I was reading. And suddenly I was reading a few lines, and in these lines it said that Haridas was daily chanting 300,000 names for the pleasure of the Lord. And it's just sort of echoing in my mind, for the pleasure of the Lord. Things, geez, I never chanted for the pleasure of the Lord. I've chanted for many reasons, but not for the pleasure of the Lord. Right? I thought, I've chanted because I'm scared that I'll get entangled in karma. And I mean, karma, I have full faith in karma. It's heavy stuff. Right? So I've chanted like anything because of that. I've chanted because really another birth, I guess I don't want one anymore. I've chanted because of that. I thought, I've also chanted because I'm curious. I wouldn't mind seeing Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram Ram. Oh, when will that day be mine? Right? Like that. I've chanted for various reasons, but for the pleasure of Krishna, I never ever thought about it, right? That you could do that. So it was interesting. So for a moment, I tried it. Not that I really did it, of course, because I was still mixed in motivation. I was chanting to experience the pleasure of acting as if I was chanting for Krishna. But anyway, I was acting it out, the role. And as I was acting it out and chanting, it was nice because automatically you start to kind of chant nicer, right? If you offer your chanting to Krishna, well, it better be proper. In my mind, I started to think about it, imagine I would offer some boga to Krishna, you know, a lot of preparations cooked, and I'd have to put it on a nice plate, right? And just, you make up the plate nicely for Krishna, you know, usually put some balls, put some little cut pieces of orange in between, and the tulsi on top, and everything is nice. Puffed up balloon puris in the middle, and you know, there you go, Krishna, here's your offering. You can't really imagine like walking onto the altar, clunk, here's your plate, you know, and splooch, here's your grub, and okay, you know, I'm not going to ring any bells because I wouldn't like it myself if people ring bells while I'm eating, that kind of mood. Just to kind of give a example of casual and careless offering, right? So when it comes to deity worship, we are strict and careful, etc. But when it comes to, because we're offering to Krishna, so chanting in the mood of making an offering to Krishna becomes real quality chanting. It was automatic. It was a very interesting exercise. And I found it a helpful meditation. But it takes us, these kind of things only come like, in the clouded sky, sometimes there's a little hole and a little sun shines through, right, for a moment. Because our normal thing is we long ago did conform to the herd and long ago became complacent and are just kind of tagging along with what goes, and you know, what goes for everybody is good enough for me, kind of mood. And how much are we truly endeavoring to come to the platform of full surrender, of pure devotional service? But if we are entering into the Chaitanya Charitamrita, then we enter into a different association. Right? We enter into another Sangha of devotees. Not that I'm not appreciating the Sangha of devotees in ISKCON, although I must say, if I'm very honest, that to some extent I'm disappointed. Right? Also with myself, with my own inabilities, but also in what comes from others, because so many times we just waste our time in mundane subject matter. Sometimes I'm just thinking, when I read about how the Vaishnavas are meeting and how they are just discussing topics about Krishna from morning till night, etc., and the whole day goes by, then I'm thinking, why don't we do that, you know? But in ISKCON, you would feel a little odd if you would do that, right? You go up to someone and you just start talking to Krishna about Krishna like that. And, you know, remember how Krishna went with his friends to the forest and like how they were playing like the animals in the forest. And you look at like, geez, look at this guy, you know, it's like things he's a Mahabhagavata or something. It feels socially a little out of place sometimes. Right, and we just have our semi, I wouldn't say mundane discussion topics, but more mundane discussion. We structure our discussions after the model of mundane discussions, mundane discussions. How are you? Right. You know, how is so-and-so? All kinds of... why not ask glorious questions like Dasarath was asking Vishwamrita Muni, who asked him, how are you progressing in your spiritual life, instead of asking, how are you? Right? Why don't we make that a rule in ISKCON? We're not supposed to ask a GBC resolution. It's forbidden from now on for devotees to ask each other, how are you? We should ask each other, how are you progressing in your spiritual life? Huh? Like that. So all this, I'm just trying to kind of paint the how Chaitanya Charitamrita offers us another level of sadhu sangha, right? And of the real sadhu sangha for which we're always hankering, for which we are seeing like, yes, this is what it should be and this is where we should go. So we all need the Chaitanya Charitamrita to pull ourselves up out of the rut, out of the complacency, out of the bad habit of years and lifetimes of just gramya kata, right? Which clearly was said here, nasunibe, that we should not hear it nor speak it, right? But it's so difficult, so difficult. But associating with the CC brings us out of that routine and brings us to another level, a level of how pure devotees associate. And gradually, by associating with the book, right, we also are associating with these Vaishnavas. It's not that we are reading. Literature like the Chaitanya Charitamrita is directly associating with the personalities that are described here. It is directly associating with the Supreme Lord. There is no difference, actually. Therefore, it's not ordinary reading. Of course, all reading is kind of associating, unfortunately, with whatever personalities are there. If you read some mundane garbage books, then indeed, one is associating with the mundane garbage. Therefore, One of the 64 principles of prescribed duty in devotional service is to avoid reading mundane literatures. You may recall that that was mentioned there, and Prabhupada expanded it. It said no newspapers, etc. It's printed in CC as one of the 64 regulative principles of devotional service, no newspapers. I'm sure that at the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he told Sanatana Goswami, there were no newspapers as yet, but on palm leaves, you know, like some newspapers like that. I don't think they had those, but still. So we see that Prabhupada sometimes in his translation is expanding a little bit, and mundane scholars attack Prabhupada's writings on this point. On this point, Shiv Ramaraj did a nice study on the Bhagavad Gita, where he is establishing that actually the way Prabhupada translates, by not just taking the literal meaning of a word, but adding also some interpretation, is actually bringing out the true meaning of the work. And he has nicely established that with proof and systematically. So I can recommend that. Book of Shiv Ramaraj, the Bhaktivedanta Purports, it's called, I think, if I remember well. Something like, is that how it's called? Yeah. It's a good book like that. I mean, if we're looking at proof, and if we're looking at how to defend ourselves from these kind of attacks where people are criticizing Prabhupada's translations. Well, with all that, I hope to kind of round it off and to kind of indicate a little bit how nice Chaitanya Charitamrita is. One thing I never managed to do, what I wanted to do, was read a little bit from Vidukta Madhava, from the play. There's two plays, Vidukta Madhava, Lalita Madhava, written by Rupa Goswami. These plays are, when we're talking about Ras Lila, I would say these plays are very, very important. Nowadays, there are more books than you can read, right? It's like, it's just amazing how many books are floating around, and devotees are just collecting them like anything. I used to also, but now I've given up. There was a time when every new book that came out in Krishna consciousness, I had to have it, right? And I got it. I had them already, you know, like the advanced copies I used to have. Like this one, you know, the all-in-one Srimad Bhagavatam with Bengali came out in 1984. I had one of the first copies and one of the last ones still around, fortunately. Hope it may stay with me. Nowadays there's so many translations, and many of these books that are translated are very nice. They're nice glorifications of the qualities of Krishna, Radharani, gopis, the meetings, the kind of very in a very ornamental way, descriptions of the Dham and all that. Right? And it's nice. It's certainly nice, all those descriptions. But I would say that in the writings of Rupa Goswami that are specifically quoted here in the CC, the mellow, the ras, is the central focus. Yeah? And these verses like that are given in Antya Lila 1 in the are bringing out the ras very, very strong. Very strong. I'll just read two or three just to kind of can I do? I've been stealing time from Tattvavid the whole seminar. And he never objects. He is like an ocean of Vaishnav qualities, because the importance of Trinadapi Sunichena, it says even if you try to cut down a tree, it doesn't protest. And I think he has really shown this this very nice qualities by my I'll take some questions in between. Sure, go ahead.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I can appreciate your concerns, and I would agree to one extent that we should read certain books in different moods. When we read Prabhupada's books, right, we just accept 100%. We drink it in, right? With other books, I have spoken during this seminar about the concept of filters, that we have to have some filters, right? So what are these filters? These filters are the Siddhanta that we have learned on so many points from Prabhupada. And if we just read some other book and we see, hey, here's a detail, it's different from Prabhupada's Siddhanta, then we should note that, right? Now, it doesn't mean you read any book, but certain books written like by sincere disciples of Prabhupada, I think can be written like that. And we may have a little filter of Prabhupada. If I'm, again, very honest, if I, with all due respect, right, to the sincere efforts of Srila Prabhupada's disciples, who continued the translation of the Bhagavatam, right, in the 10th canto and 11th canto, I like it very much, right, but still I cannot relate to it in the same way as I relate to it to the purports Prabhupada wrote. And I think, I do not mean to diminish them in any way, but it's just the way it is. And for a while, I had to get used to the idea, and I wouldn't read it. For a while, I mean, had inner resistance to read, and then it took some time, then I started reading it, and then I started appreciating it. But something is always a little antenna, you know, a little alertness is always there when I read. I always say, well, do I agree with that? Or maybe not. You know, that tendency I do have. And I use my Prabhupada filters. Yeah. So I think when we become more mature in our Krishna consciousness, we can venture out a little bit more in our reading. And we can start using our filters. Don't go too far. Don't read all day long, you know, other books. I mean, keep the menu healthy, like I've been mentioning. But I think especially in the beginning, we need this kind of rigidity. Because in the beginning, our filters are not very much developed. So we have to take time to really read the book so that we get very familiar with the Siddhanta. But once we are very familiar with the Siddhanta as Prabhupada has presented it, then we can venture out a little bit. And we may sometimes come across some statements and we see there's a little bit of opinion there. Now that we are on this topic, I want to expand it a little bit. And at least a thought that occurred to me was that in the past also many, many literatures were written, right? Just as today. So that many of the literatures that are coming to us from the past and that are being translated today may also be of a secondary nature compared to the primary literatures such as Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's not because it's old, right, that it's necessarily free from opinion or more authorized. There are certain books which are referred to clearly like being spiritually deviant or things like that, that we find some references in purports to certain titles, right, from the past. And but even if they're not deviant, they may not be as important as, right? So they may just contribute. So the main reading is here. There's without a doubt. Okay. I think that ISKCON has evolved from a movement which had a very collective orientation over the last few years to a movement which gets individual orientation. And this shift in ISKCON is just going through our movement with great speed and very rapidly turning the whole movement upside down or turning it around. Previously, the whole focus was collective, everything collective. And everything was GBC-controlled, authorized boards, you know, in regards to books. We had, like, boards approving them, review boards and this and that. But at one point, the dynamics of individualism in our society began to take over so much that there was no control over it anymore. It was not possible. Everyone began to develop individual tendencies and do what he thought was right and no longer just waited for some superior to approve. Books were being published at such a large speed. There were no reviewers. Sannyasis were supposed to review it, and they said, look, you know, like, I mean, I got enough to read. I can't really handle all these books. Give me a break. I got to give so many lectures and this stuff. So in the end, he said, okay, you know, I mean, everyone should just know for himself. Now, the protection mechanism, therefore, is not the GBC. The protection mechanism is the spiritual master. So approach your spiritual master and ask the spiritual master, if there's any doubt, right? Ask the spiritual master what can be read, what cannot be read, because he knows each disciple and he knows where the disciple is and what he can handle, what he cannot handle, etc. And in this way, it works actually better, because this kind of collective organizational approach is difficult. It requires a whole law enforcement, etc. Better in the personal system of Guru Parampara. That works better. Now a few verses from the... Yes. It begins with an opening verse, which is nice. May the pastimes of Sri Krishna reduce the misery existing in the material world and nullify all unwanted desires. The pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are like shikarini, a blend of yogurt and sugar candy. They overpower the pride of even the nectar produced on the moon, for they distribute the sweet fragrance of the concentrated loving affairs of Srimati Radharani and the gopis. So nice start, huh? May it reduce the miseries existing in the material world. So here it says, experiencing previous attachment to Krishna, Purvarag, Srimati Radharani thought, since I've heard the name of a person called Krishna, I've practically lost my good sense. Then there's another person who plays his flute in such a way that after I hear the vibration, intense madness arises in my heart. And again, there is still another person to whom my mind becomes attached when I see his beautiful lightning effulgence in his picture. Therefore, I think that I'm greatly condemned, for I've become simultaneously attached to three persons. It would be better for me to die because of this. It's a little bit like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with the five senses competing for each other. And here we see how Srimati Radharani, different senses become totally attracted by different features of Krishna. My dear friend, these palpitations of Srimati Radharani's heart are extremely difficult to cure. Even if one applied some medical treatment, it would only end in defamation. Oh, dearly beautiful one. It was Srimati Radharani who spoke. Oh, dear beautiful. The artistic loveliness of your picture is now impressed within my mind. Since you're now living within my mind, wherever I wish to run, because I'm agitated by impressions of you, I find that you, oh my friend, are blocking my way. Again, Srimati Radharani speaking. Upon seeing peacock feathers in front of her, this girl suddenly begins trembling when she sometimes sees a necklace of ganja. Those are the small seeds with reddish. In the old translation, says small conch shells. That's wrong. So, when she sometimes sees a necklace of ganja, she sheds tears and cries loudly. I do not know what kind of ecstatic influences entered the heart of this poor girl. It has imbued her with the dancing attitude of a player, creating wonderful and unprecedented dances on a stage. It is said it is spoken by Mukara, Lord Krishna's grandmother, in a conversation with the grandmother of Radharani, Purnamasi. So here you see the grandmothers are also talking about the whole thing, you know, like what's going on between their grandchildren. So that's kind of interesting. They follow everything. Anyway, it's 1:45. What can I do? If you want to get into it, you'll have to read it yourself. I think there's no other way. I couldn't cover the Chaitanya Charitamrita in this seminar. The only thing to do for all of us is to just read it ourselves again and again. And I hope that my seminar inspired all of you to read more. It definitely inspired me to read more from the CC. So I don't know if it worked for you, increasing your appreciation for the Chaitanya Charitamrita, but this seminar has certainly increased mine. So I think it was very nice. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.